Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg ad-free and right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings or the midnight munchies. Yeah, you know who you are with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with the latest edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week from Nashville. First, as travel heats up to Europe, we'll check in with the CEO of one of the world's newest airlines, Norse Atlantic, which is in the thick of a battle of low-fare wars over the Atlantic. Then we'll dig deep into Nashville and Music City with historian David Steele Ewing. The chairman and president of legendary Gibson Guitars will stop by, and Mike Severson, the founder and owner of Songwriter City. First up, Bjorn Larsson, the founder of Norse Atlantic.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Bjorn, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Peter.
You know, in reading your bio, I had to chuckle a little bit because, you know, when I talk about people who are running airlines, if you look at their bio, it always says, well, they had 25 years of airline experience before they assumed the role of CEO. You, on the other hand, were a travel agent. And all of a sudden, boom, you bought an airline. I love it. I mean, of course, you know the question people are going to always ask you, like, what did you know about an airline? By the way, that to me is a plus. Because people with tons of airline experience are bound to make the same mistakes. I just think that they haven't really learned. But why Norse Atlantic and why now?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. And as you know, airline business is a financially very, very risky business. And a lot of companies have gone belly up in their attempt to create a sustainable business. Now, we started basically because we saw a great opportunity in COVID. And I just have to add that between the travel agent business and now, I've been working in the maritime shipping space for the last 33 years. So I know a little bit about transportation. And what I do know is that in a very volatile business, you need to manage your financial risks very carefully. So you need to protect your downside. And how we do that in our business, in the maritime space, and now in the airline business, is to buy when it's cheap. It's simple as that. And during COVID, we could get hold of a very modern fleet of Dreamliners for historic low prices, and that was basically what triggered the opportunity.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the Dreamliners. I know where the Dreamliners came from, right? They came from the airline that went under called Norwegian, which I flew a lot. And so it's sort of Norwegian plus, if you will. In fact, I flew on you the other night when we went over to London on one of your 787 Dreamliners, because you launched service, what, in 2022 from Oslo to New York, and then you've added service, of course, New York to London, and I think you're going to Paris as well pretty soon. But what's interesting to me is that if I take a look at a fair comparison of the major legacy carriers, American, United, Delta, throw in Air France, throw in British Air, and I'm looking right now at a round trip fare in coach from, let's say, New York to London's Heathrow, I'm looking at $1,200 minimum, and maybe even more to France. Those airfares are through the roof. You just had airfares not too long ago. I saw it as a pop-up sale. You had round trip from New York to London for, I think, $358. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, those are definitely bargains. We have a lot of very good prices, very attractive fares. But having said that, also we have a little higher prices when demand is at its peak. And yes, we're based in Norway, but I would say we're more a European/American airline where our main focus is to fly between big cities in Europe and America, where there is a catchment in both ends. And that's what we do during the summer season. And for winter, we are doing a bit of the same, but we are adding some destinations, Caribbean and Thailand, for example.
Yeah, I saw, Bjorn, I saw that you were going to go from Oslo to Bangkok. I said, count me in. I love that idea.
Well, lovely. So you're more than welcome aboard, Peter, anytime.
No, and the reason why I noticed that right away is that if you take a look at the beginning of Thai Airways, when they first started, what saved Thai Airways is they were trained by SAS. They were trained by the Scandinavians. So you're in good company there on a route that will be very, very popular, I'm sure. But what you just said earlier, I think, is an important notation here. And most of our travelers who listen to my show may not realize this. Most people, when they make reservations, are looking at point-to-point travel. And I'm telling everybody not to do that anymore, to go beyond. Meaning, if I want to go, let's say, from New York to Bangkok, why wouldn't I go through Oslo? If I want to go from New York to Milan, if I want to go from New York to Dubai, why wouldn't I go through Milan? You're seeing so many airline routes that are going through their major hub cities that you're not thinking about because you're always thinking nonstop. And if you break up the trip and you look at it that way as different segments, in many cases, the airfares are actually cheaper.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And I think the traveling public is also changing their habits. So people are getting more accustomed to building their own schedules, where they are either buying sectors or they might buy a through fare, but with various airlines, and then add on hotels themselves. And there is a big change in how people are traveling, also post COVID, which I think is to the benefit of those who can provide either nonstop flights between cities that can justify that, or good connecting flights, even if it isn't a scheduled hub or anything like that. So I think you're right, and we see a lot of people who build their own itineraries these days.
Now, I know you're going right now between New York and London and New York and Paris. Any other U.S. gateway cities you're looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. And this summer, we're going to fly from New York, from Los Angeles, from San Francisco, Washington, D.C., Orlando, and Fort Lauderdale. And we're adding Boston in September. So we have actually now 7 airports in the U.S. being served. And we're flying to Paris, Berlin, Oslo, London, and Rome. And all of those are big hits during summer.
Now, of course, in the New York to London route, you're flying to Gatwick instead of Heathrow, which I happen to think is a plus because you just jump on the Gatwick Express and it's easy. If you're flying to Paris, are you going to De Gaulle or are you going to Orly?
We're going to De Gaulle. That's the main airport, and it served us very well. We're at the Terminal 3 there, which is a really great passenger experience as well. So Paris has been flown there for a bit more than a month, but it's been a real success.
And of course, later this year, you're going from Oslo to Bangkok. I keep coming back to that, which means if you want to do what I want to do, you're going to pack 2 sets of clothing, your winter clothes and your summer clothes, winter for Oslo, summer for Bangkok, and you'll have a great time. How about that for an idea?
I think it's a perfect combo.
My thanks to Bjorn. And now a look at Music City with historian David Steele Ewing on the evolution of a community and a culture.
My next guest knows just a little bit about Nashville. He's a 9th generation Nashvillian. Am I right?
Yes, Peter. This has been home. Actually, the first 3 were involuntary. We were enslaved by people, including Andrew Jackson, but my family stuck around.
And that family, of course, is David Steele Ewing, our Nashville historian and tour guide. But I mean, you're still here.
I love it here. I would live nowhere other place.
You know, for most people, Nashville, you know, we know the term Music City. Mm-hmm. We know that, you know, you're going to find some of the greatest artists here ever. But we'll get back to Music City in a second. Outside of Music City, this is a growing city.
We are a boom town. And 50 years ago, we had about 400,000 people. Now we're about 715,000. And the outer areas around the city are just growing even faster. The Four Seasons is a very typical part of our growth that you would have never imagined 10 years ago that we would have hotels like the Four Seasons.
Because it wasn't associated with Nashville. I mean, you know, Nashville wasn't considered a luxury city.
We are now a luxury city. We have luxury travels. I give tours to luxury visitors all the time, including YPO groups and conventions, and they come here for our great restaurants and now our great hospitality and hotels.
And of course, speaking of Nashville history, you talked about the first 3, the first 3 generations here we're talking about. I mean, that's part of American history, right? We're talking about slavery. We're talking about later on, of course, the Civil Rights Movement.
Nashville was settled as a city on Christmas Day, 1779, right across the street from the Four Seasons on the banks of the Cumberland River. Our first settlers came here and built a fort in the downtown area, and we've had a city ever since.
And, of course, was it a railhead?
It was a railhead later in the 19th century, around the time of the Civil War. The railroads came through here and took goods and people, and that was a big part of our economy, too.
But was it originally built around the river?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yes. Everything goes around the river unless, you know, you later go to the 20th century with railroads.
So where did music come in and how did it come in?
Music really was, the term Music City came from the Fisk Jubilee Singers. Fisk University was a school started for African Americans after the Civil War. My mother attended that school and graduated. She was in John Lewis's class. And in the early days of Fisk, they had a singing group of students who went and traveled the country to raise money for the school. And they sung the same songs that they sung during the days of plantation days and slavery.
So we're talking balladeers.
Yes, Negro spirituals.
Yeah.
And they had an audience in the White House here in the United States. And then Queen Victoria invited them to have a concert for her. And we became known globally as Music City because of the Fisk Jubilee Singers traveling around and singing these great songs.
And it wasn't until later that the Ryman Auditorium came in.
The Ryman Auditorium was built in 1892 by a riverboat captain named Tom Ryman. I'm writing a book on the Ryman right now. It's the best place to hear music. It's only 2,400 seats. It's acoustically perfect.
Can I tell you a secret?
Yes.
Well, you asked me right before we went on the air, when was the last time I was in Nashville? Mm-hmm. I was here doing a piece on someone you know very well. She and I went into the Ryman together. Mm-hmm. We were the only 2 ones in there. and we sang an a cappella duet.
Wow. You got to sing at the stage on the Ryman Auditorium.
With Dolly Parton.
But
wait, what happened after I sang the song?
What?
She looked at me and she said, "You sure ain't no singer."
Keep your day job, Peter.
There is video of that, if anybody wants to know.
Dolly had her Opry debut at the Ryman, and she was asked to join the Opry in 1969. The other two people that were asked to join that year were George Jones and Tammy Wynette. It is the mother church of country music. If you've never been, it is worth traveling to Nashville just to see a concert at the Ryman.
Exactly. It is, and it's not big.
No, 2,400 seats.
It's intimate.
Every seat is good, and it's just this magical place.
Okay, so that goes back to the 1890s.
Yes.
Right? But then we went from Jubilee singers to country music. How?
In 1925, an insurance company started a radio show called the Grand Ole Opry.
From the Ryman.
Not originally from the Ryman. The Ryman was the fifth home of the Grand Ole Opry.
They started
from the penthouse of their studios on the sixth floor near the state capitol. And this radio show, which at first featured an artist by the name of Uncle Jimmy Thompson, who was a fiddler, had a long beard, was 79 years old, played fiddle for an hour. They got hundreds of letters after he was on the air saying, "More of that, please." And country music was just born here. Ken Burns did a 16-hour documentary on the history of country music, and most of that was about Nashville.
So, David, we see how it starts, right? But now I walk out of this hotel, and I turn right. I go about 40 feet. I'm surrounded by music, right? There's live music when you land at the airport. I mean, this is truly...
No more live music in any place on the planet than Nashville, Tennessee. And actually, this concentration of Lower Broadway, which is from the river to John Lewis...
Which is really where we are right now.
Yes. There are about 25 bars that start playing live music around 10 o'clock each morning and play till 3 a.m.
Let's start again. Each morning.
Each morning, yes. The singer song.
So there's no point in going to bed.
No. This is Music City. We don't sleep. Everyone wants to be the next big star. They want to be the next Brad Paisley, Garth Brooks, Keith Urban. And, you know, you start off by playing these honky-tonks on Broadway, and you mainly play for tips. You've got the tip bucket out, and you've got big dreams and big talent. That's what Nashville's all about.
Do you play an instrument?
I have played the piano when I was young, but that's it.
All right, so I don't have to give you a tip today.
No.
But I mean, that people just come here and it's just like nonstop auditioning.
Yes. If you want to be anything in the country music business, you have to move to Nashville. We actually write more songs in Nashville, Tennessee before noon than most cities write in a month or a year. This is our industry.
By the way, speaking of songwriting, what I learned about Dolly Parton, how many songs has she written?
Oh, thousands.
Thousands.
Yes.
Thousands.
And she wrote Jolene and I Will Always Love You on the same day. That is just incredible.
Is that true?
Yes.
Wow. And of course, we all know who covered I Will Always Love You.
Whitney Houston. Dolly made about $10 million off of the covering. Because when you write a song, if you hear a song on the radio, the money gets split in two. The publisher gets half, and then the songwriter gets half. Not the performer, the songwriter. The copyright law of 1909 rewards the owner of the copyright and the creator.
So Dolly hit a double hit there.
Yes. But Dolly, of course, can do no wrong. You know, she has given back so much with her Imagination Library. And then, of course, she gave Vanderbilt University $1 million. And they turned that into the vaccine that became Moderna. And she just recently gave them another $1 million. So, you know, Dolly is our most popular and most famous Tennessean.
She cannot do any wrong. And every once in a while, she comes back and plays as well.
She does. I've seen her at the Ryman. And, you know, Dolly lives here part of the year, and so, you know, people have Dolly run-ins.
Dolly run-ins. Yes. And she's still on the bus.
She
is still on the bus. She took me in the bus one day. She said, "I'm going to show you something secret." So I go in the back of the bus, right way in the back of the bus where her bedroom is, and there are these four doors, and she opened them up. What's back there?
Dresses.
Wigs.
Wigs.
All the wigs.
Well, you'll appreciate this. The tour bus industry started here in Nashville, Tennessee, for the Grand Ole Opry.
Before rock and roll.
Yes. The Grand Ole Opry started in 1925, and it's the longest-running radio show in the world. But if you were a member of the Grand Ole Opry back then, you had to play Saturday night at the Opry. So the Opry doesn't pay much scale, so you had to go travel somewhere else to make money, but you had to be back in Nashville on Saturday night. So all these musicians had tour buses, Ernest Tubb and Hank Williams. They had to be back here to play the Opry on Saturday night.
And not to mention the fact they were also living in the buses.
Yes.
Amazing. So in a given week, Can you ever estimate how many performances there are?
Oh, if you count Lower Broadway, I mean, there are hundreds of performances every week here. And then we have smaller venues like the Exit Inn, the Bluebird, Listening Room. So there's lots of places, the Nashville Palace, there's lots of places that you could hear live music.
And you forgot one thing, which is walking distance from this hotel. You ready?
Okay.
The Nashville Symphony.
I was on the board of the Nashville Symphony when we built the Skirmerhorn Symphony Center, and that building is beautiful. That building will be here in 200 years like the Ryman Auditorium. It's a world-class symphony hall that Martha Ingram helped raise $130 million for, and our symphony has really kind of taken off over the last 10 years. We've won lots of Grammys, and it's also a building that also concerts are in, too.
And for those people who are looking for a sense of place here and want to know how to get here, Nashville is, what, a 10-hour drive to anywhere in the country?
10-hour drive for half the country's population.
Wow.
So you think about Chicago, New Orleans, Memphis, Birmingham. It takes a day's drive to get to Nashville.
If you're driving with somebody else.
Yes.
Hey, listen, I went to college. I know the all-nighters on the interstate.
Yes.
When people first come here, I mean, you're ninth generation, but when people first come here, what's the biggest surprise to them about Nashville?
I give tours every week, and the people that visit here and I show around, you know, they're surprised that the city is really a big city, but, you know, it still has a small town feel, and that we have the amenities that kind of larger cities have, that these great restaurants, you know, a wonderful first-class airport now, and that we're a safe and clean city, too. No one wants to visit your city if it's not clean and safe, and we spend a lot of money and resources making sure it is.
Wow, cool. And what's the biggest surprise that still exists for you about Nashville?
The biggest surprise is still how many people haven't been to Nashville recently or still have the kind of image of Nashville like Hee Haw back in the 70s and 80s. You know, we're still...
You're dating me now.
And we're still trying to get rid of that image. But, you know, Nashville is a grown-up city, but some people still think it's a really small town.
You know, you mentioned Hee Haw, Roy Clark.
Yes, Buck Owens. I mean, everyone was on Hee Haw. Dolly Parton was on Hee Haw. Garth Brooks was on Hee Haw. Johnny Cash. I mean, you name it. Everyone made an appearance.
You can't talk about Nashville without using the word guitar. And you can't talk about guitars without talking about the iconic Gibson guitar.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Cesar Guikian, how are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
I mean, this is quite a place.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, this is the Mecca.
This, to us, that's exactly what we had in mind when we designed it.
But you've only been here how many years?
4.5 years.
So this is brand new for you too when you got here.
Oh yeah, this didn't exist. This was our vision of how do we want to be represented if somebody were to walk into a Gibson place and us not have to explain anything. What does Gibson look like? And that's how we came up with the Gibson Garage.
But your personal story, you're a third generation American born in Argentina.
I'm third generation Armenian born
Armenian.
In Argentina. My great grandparents escaped the genocide.
Wow. So you've had quite a journey.
Yeah, I grew up with that history and a lot of that sort of pain that came with relocating and being part of the Armenian diaspora. But also I think that gave us a lot of strength. I see around my family and how we grew up with hard work and commitment and you know, having a dream and not stopping until we were able to get there.
Of course, you've lived in Miami, London, Hong Kong, Buenos Aires, of course. What is it about Nashville for you? What was the surprise for you when you got here?
Nashville is one of the most friendly and inviting places. I would say the most friendly and inviting city that I've ever been to, that I've ever lived in. And it's still growing and relatively small compared to all the places I lived in. And I was very welcomed. My family was very welcomed here from the very beginning. You know, you could say that it had to do with us being part of this iconic American brand, but ultimately over time that wore off, and all the friends I have continued to be welcoming and friendly, and it's actually my favorite place to live.
But did you ever say that about the other places?
I always knew that I was going to be there temporarily. I mean, I lived 10 years in New York, 8 in London, as you mentioned. I was in Hong Kong temporarily, lived in Chicago, lived in Miami, grew up in Argentina. Argentina and Uruguay I love. I always go back. Nashville is going to be family headquarters.
So you're saying this is your forever place now?
And I'm building the forever place. It's been 3 years in the making.
When you got here, now the good news is, of course, you've been playing guitar since you were 10.
Yeah.
So this is not exactly a tough transition for you.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, with my mom, over the years I started accumulating guitar knowledge. I would open everything up. I would look inside, inspect the woods, and study how it was made and what it had inside. And my mom always said, wow, you've got this incredible amount of useless knowledge about guitars. And now I tell my mom, see, Mom, I can put it to work.
Well, I've always said that if you understand the process, that's the only way you value the product.
Yeah.
Right? So how many different woods go into a Gibson? Oh. Or can go into a Gibson?
Well, depends on the guitar, but if you pick the most famous guitar of all time, the Gibson Les Paul, it's got maple on the top, mahogany on the back and the neck, it's got rosewood on the fingerboard, and then it's got all the electronics. So three very important tone woods that go into it, and then the rest is how we make it.
The Les Paul goes back how many years?
It started in 1952.
And it's still around.
It actually started in 1948 when we first designed it. And not a lot of people know that we first presented as a solid body electric guitar. It was presented to Tony Mottola, who was Frank Sinatra's.
I remember Tony Mottola. He was his backup guy.
Yeah, he was his guitar player. Yeah. He played a Gibson Super 400, which is a semi-hollow guitar. And so he didn't love the solid body concept, and therefore we go and present it to Les Paul himself. Les Paul had
so he was the second choice.
He was the second choice. He was the most famous touring act at the time with Mary Ford, and he had a connection with Gibson for a long time. He had been testing guitars and playing since the 40s with us, and when he saw our concept of the solid body electric guitar, which already was shaped that way, he had already been working on a solid body himself. It's a famous guitar called the Log that he had been working on at the Epiphone factory in New York. He immediately jumped on, and I have all of these in our record, so I'm not making this up. He jumped on and became the person who endorsed it.
How old is Gibson?
We are 130 years, almost 130. Actually, 130 years this year.
Obviously started with the acoustic guitars.
1894. Orville Gibson starts making mandolins first, and then immediately after starts making guitars. And he was inspired by the way that Stradivarius's violins were built, which they have a
little curve,
a little carved top,
yeah,
as opposed to being flat. And he said, what happens if I incorporate that technology at the time into a mandolin and a guitar? And he figured out they actually sound bigger. They sound better. And that's how we started making instruments, applying that concept.
Wow. And now, how many different brands?
Well, now Gibson is our main brand, of course. But in 1957, thanks to Les Paul himself, we acquired Epiphone. He was the one who brokered that deal. And we owned Epiphone, Kramer. A couple of years ago, we bought Mesa Boogie, which Randy Smith started 53 years ago, and he's still with us.
Wow.
And a couple of other brands.
This is not just a location where visitors come. It's also a place where musicians come.
That's right. This is amazing what's happened since we opened up the garage. It's become a destination. Even right before speaking to you, I was here with a couple of artists, and that's a daily occurrence. People come, fans come here, artists come here. Sometimes I'm out at the garage, out there in the public, working, helping the team. And I ask somebody, like, what brought you here? And they said, the Gibson Garage. And then I asked them, but what brought you to Nashville? You know, they come to see a show, and they say, the Gibson Garage.
And what's in the Gibson Garage?
Well, there's always about 400 guitars. No matter what day it is, there's 400 guitars between the carousel that goes around the ceiling with about 200 guitars, and then 200 guitars in the rest of the space. Everything is there to be played, tried, everything from the $300 guitar to the $50,000 custom shop. Everything is there for you to come and try.
All tuned?
Everything is tuned. Everything is ready to go.
Do you have a curator?
We do. I actually dare you to go and find one that's not in tune.
What's your most impressive guitar that's in the collection? Not by price, yeah, but by story.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of instruments that Orville made himself. And I think those tie us back to our original DNA of how Gibson and how Orville started making instruments, with that brilliant concept of everything that goes into the guitar has to be in service to sound.
So I'm thinking there's Orville and Wilbur for the planes.
Right.
And now we have Orville for the guitars.
Yeah, we do. That's right.
Name another Orville.
I never thought about it that way.
Think about it.
I can't.
Amazing. What's the biggest surprise? When people come here, I think they've read up about it, of course, but until they see it, they're not ready.
No, I think generally people are blown away. Just when you walk into the garage and you see that big sign and you see the guitars going around in the carousel, you see that stage, and you see the quality of what we've built, which had to be there because of the quality of our guitars, right? How we build guitars, that sort of quality and craftsmanship that goes into our instruments had to be reflected in the space. And so I think it's a little bit overwhelming at the beginning. You see the space and it's like, oh my God. But then you get into it, you warm up, you start grabbing and playing. And our team, I got to tell you, our team is amazing. They make everybody feel welcome, no matter what your level.
And performances here?
Constantly. I think the garage stage is being used about 3 evenings a week, whether it's a record launch, an artist performance, a charity event. We do a lot of fundraising for Gibson Gives and our extended partners. We do a lot of greatness, I think, for music education. We always love saying, we do everything we do one guitar at a time. And I think one guitar at a time matters.
And the guitars are all made here?
All of our electric guitars are made here in Nashville.
But not the acoustics.
The acoustics are made in Bozeman, Montana.
So when I think acoustic guitars, I always think of Bozeman. No, I don't. How did Bozeman show up?
About 35 years ago, we bought a company that made mandolins called Flatiron Mandolins. And they were so good. There was this ecosystem of luthierism there that over the years after that acquisition, we started moving acoustic guitars as well onto that team. And since about 32 years ago, now every Gibson acoustic guitar is made there.
Is there a kind of wood that you used to use that you're no longer using?
Well, that's a great question, Peter. The holy grail of tone woods, it's called Brazilian rosewood. And since the early 90s, it's been banned. I mean, it was an endangered species. And so that's why also a lot of vintage instruments that, pre-1964, 65, that were made with Brazilian rosewood fingerboards are so coveted.
Banned because of what they were doing in the rainforest in Brazil.
What they were doing in the rainforest in Brazil. So we were able to find a very large reservoir of Brazilian rosewood about 2 years ago that took about 3 years ago. So 3 years ago we found it, and 2 years of working with the different government entities to bring it over, and now we have a pretty good stash of Brazilian.
But after that, it's gone.
After that, it'll be gone.
Oh, my goodness. It's like koa in Hawaii.
In Hawaii.
You can't find it anymore. Mm-hmm. Too bad. I know. Is there a kind of guitar you no longer make anymore?
Well, we made a lot of instruments that, depending on the decade, now we don't make. I mean, I was actually just discussing this with my team. I really do love a shape that was called the RD. That was the Gibson RD that was made in the 70s and the 80s that we're not making anymore. I'd love to bring that guitar back one day.
One of the things that attracted me to come over and want to talk to you is that you even have a partnership with the Four Seasons Hotel.
We do.
I mean, you're going to bring guitars to the hotel?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, so there's we developed this concept. Erica from our team developed the concept with them of having in-room Gibson service, which that allows you to have a guitar in your room.
By the way, whether you play one or not.
Well, yes, I guess you're right. Yes. but it's a really cool feature, I think, for a lot of us who travel and don't want to travel with a guitar, to have a guitar in your room. And it's a Gibson. It's a Gibson acoustic, so you know you're getting a great instrument. And
no amp.
No, we're still working on that with them.
Yeah.
But I think an acoustic guitar will get you through and hopefully inspire you to play. And then it also gives you the ability to come to the garage, have a private tour, take a look inside, take a look at the vault, which is not open to the public, and a couple of other cool features.
So if I show up here and I want a guitar, but I want my own guitar, you can custom make one.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we do that regularly, whether it's for fans or artists. We'll design from the very beginning everything you want into your favorite instrument.
You know, one of my favorite stories did not involve Gibson. It involved Taylor. You know the story about the guy on United Airlines, what they did with his guitar?
No.
You ever heard that story?
I haven't.
Oh my God, you gotta Google this. He's on a flight from Chicago to Lincoln, Nebraska. He's touring with his band, and he has an acoustic guitar, which he always puts in the overhead compartment.
Right.
And the gate agent said, sorry, you have to check it. He said, I always take this on the plane. He says, you have to check it. If you don't check it, you don't fly. And he had to be performing that night. So he said, okay. So he checks it, and he's sitting in his window seat. And all of a sudden, the woman behind him, he hears her shriek. And he looks out the window, and the baggage guys are playing Frisbee with his guitar.
Oh, my.
They're just throwing it everywhere. And, of course, when he lands in Lincoln, Nebraska, there's not much left of the guitar.
Sure.
So he calls United Airlines saying, you going to fix the guitar? They said, no, we don't do that. I said, well, you broke my guitar. So they wouldn't do anything for him. So you know what he did? He wrote a song called United Airlines Broke My Guitar.
Yeah.
He got 25 of his friends together. It went viral, right? And I mean, I'm talking millions of views. I had him on the show. The Taylor guitar people said, you know what? We'll outfit your entire band. You're now our ambassador. Then United Airlines still wouldn't fix the guitar. So we did a second video and had 100 extras. They all worked for free because they all hated the airline.
Yeah.
Right? They did that one. It goes viral. They put him on Letterman's show. Finally, United Airlines calls and said, would you like to come talk to us?
Yeah.
And maybe you could come and advise our baggage guys. So they fly him to Chicago. I can't make this up. They lost his bags.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, on that happy note, we're at Gibson, not Taylor.
Yeah.
Cesar, what are you going to play on that acoustic guitar, which was not broken by the airlines?
Well, let me play something that I wrote a couple of years ago.
Does it have a name?
No, I haven't named it yet.
It's called Cesar Song.
It's called Cesar Song.
Go for it. Nicely done.
All right, thank you.
You know, it's a nice coincidence that the president of the company also happens to play the product of the company.
Some say not very well, but I play.
You got through with that.
Yeah, I got through. I can get through with it, yeah.
Okay, you may not get to the second round, but you did okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm staying at the Four Seasons, so I can call you guys up and say, can you send a guitar to my room?
Well, actually, you already book it through them. So there's a number of Gibson acoustic guitars that are already there.
Okay.
And so if you book room service by Gibson, automatically when you show up and you check in, it'll be in the room.
Do you send somebody over who can actually teach me how to play the guitar?
Oh, we can do that.
You can?
Yeah, you should come. Well, come to the garage. All of our pros are amazing guitarists and amazing teachers.
So within an hour, I'm doing Stairway to Heaven?
Well.
Probably not. Okay. Well. Okay, it was a thought.
Let's start with a simpler song.
Mary Had a Little Lamb?
Sweet Home Alabama.
That actually is a simple song.
Yeah, it's three chords.
It's three chords.
Yeah.
Look what it did for that group.
Yeah, exactly.
My thanks to Caesar. Now, if Nashville is truly a city of music, it's also a city of songwriters and storytellers. And Mike Severson, the founder and owner of Songwriter City, has created a place for both the songwriters and the stories they need to tell.
Mike Severson, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So everywhere I walk, it's an acoustic event because within 5 feet of this hotel, I'm hearing music. I land at the airport. There's live music at the airport. I mean, I'm fully expecting my cab driver to whip out a guitar on the way into the city. Why did you start Songwriter City and what is it?
Well, I mean, we're not only known as Music City, Nashville, but also songwriter capital of the world. I think the biggest and best songwriters live and work right here in the Nashville area from all different genres.
And yeah, what I've noticed is no matter where they go to get fame and fortune, they keep a place here.
Absolutely. And we've been seeing a lot of people move from LA and New York and other markets to here to be in the songwriter community. And I think that's the most important thing of what this town is it's a community of artists and songwriters that live and work together. And it's a great cohesive bunch of people and it works.
I mean, of course, in New York, we remember the old songwriter building, the Brill Building and where all they used to hang out, you know, the Carole Kings. And that's where she wrote all those songs with so many other lyricists and songwriters. But what are you doing here specifically?
Well, with Songwriter City, the songwriter round was kind of born here in Nashville, and it's where songwriters will get together and tell the stories behind the songs that they've written and perform those acoustically, kind of the way that they were originally written. And then they'll engage with an audience, you know, a crowd that's at the venue. And I've been in the industry for about, 30 years, a little over 30 years, and I've seen everybody on the face of the earth when it comes to live shows. I worked at record labels for many, many years, and it's my favorite form of entertainment when it's done right.
How many record labels have you worked for?
After MCA Records and Rounder and Midas Records, it gets a little cloudy. I mean, I bounced around a little bit after that, so probably half a dozen.
Okay.
Just to, some of them are, I don't know if they were actually record labels. if I'm looking back, I'm...
But everybody claimed they had one.
Right, exactly.
But, when songwriting is really storytelling, I mean, that's really what it is.
Right.
But there's something called Songwriters Rounds.
That's right. And, made famous by the Bluebird Cafe here in town, and also the show Nashville, oddly enough. And I think that really opened the eyes of to a lot of people nationally about what...
You talk about the Robert Altman movie?
No, the series on ABC.
See, I'm dating myself. You have to go back and watch the Robert Altman movie.
And I've seen that movie as well, yeah. And that I think that those sort of movies and television shows will open the eyes of kind of what Nashville's all about. The Bluebird Cafe is the most famous for it. It's a small little venue here in town. And what I have seen, the reaction from people that have seen shows like this, it's just something uniquely special and very authentic Nashville. And I wanted to
What is a songwriter's round?
Songwriter round. It's where, you'll have a number of songwriters together and they will gather sometimes in a circle, most of the time in a straight line, that they still call it a round. And they'll take turns performing those hit songs or songs that they've written. And then they'll tell the stories. And it's a very much a storytelling event. And that's what's the most compelling part of it is the storytelling. And then it connects the viewer and the listener in a new way to the songs, in a deeper way.
Well, it gives a context.
Absolutely. And it means more to the person listening and watching once they experience it. So,
I mean, it's like one thing to hear, Bonnie Raitt sing Angel from Montgomery. It's another thing to have John Prine tell you what the story's all about.
That's exactly right. And that's what these songwriters are. And a lot of them are incredible vocalists, and they can play, they can sing, they can tell a story, engage with the crowd. Many of them former recording artists who just became songwriters in one way or the other, and that's what they do full time now. So they know how to entertain and connect to an audience. So you really have something magical when you put the right combination of songwriters together, and that's what Songwriter City is. We provide and curate those type of songwriter experiences, mostly for corporate and private events in Nashville and around the country.
and tell those stories.
And tell the stories. It's very much all about storytelling.
As I hope my show is as well. But the bottom line is, you have how many on your roster of songwriters?
It ebbs and flows, but right now we have around 50 in different tier levels. And, you know, some of them have 25, 30 number ones. Some of them have, you know, 10, 15. And then you have others that are newer and they're on the rise and they have one, two, three number one songs. But
the ones with the most number ones, would we know who they are? We might know the song. We
right.
might not know them.
That's the deal. Yeah, a lot of people don't know who they are, but they are the real talent in this town, in my opinion.
When people come, what's the biggest surprise for them?
Do a songwriter room?
Yeah.
Wow, there are many revelations that happen during an evening. And number one, that their favorite recording artist didn't actually write the song. I think, you know, when they're telling the story behind something they wrote for Tim McGraw or Blake Shelton or Miranda Lambert, countless other artists, and they're shocked that they didn't write those. And so that's the first thing that happens. The second thing that happens is, wow, this story's, you know, a little behind the scenes look behind what it is to be a songwriter. So I think a lot of people don't even know what it means to be a songwriter. So they're learning, not only are they learning that they wrote the songs, but they're learning, oh, what is it about to be a songwriter? What's it like? So it's very much a revelation that's happening and light bulbs are going off and, you know, in their heads. And so it's a lot of fun to watch and, it, you know, you can see it's palpable in the room.
There's also the definition of terms of what country music is, because things have sort of morphed over to pop as well.
It's always morphing into something else, some other sound, but it encompasses a lot of different sounds now. You just listen to...
I mean, for example, if somebody said to me, okay, bluegrass, got to have a banjo, got to have a fiddle, right? Country western, well, got to have a guitar, right?
Yes.
Probably an accordion every once in a while.
No accordions.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you absolutely sure?
Sometimes you can have an accordion.
There you go, see?
Sometimes you can have... That's right. You can have an accordion. You can have a steel guitar. I think in today's terms of modern country, guitar, it's always about the guitar.
You didn't say modern country.
Or traditional country.
There you go, see? But what I'm saying is the definitions change.
It does.
So that, you know, I remember when a country record got on the pop charts, people thought, oh my God, what has happened? When in fact, there's so many country songs that are now on the pop charts as well.
That's right.
They just morph over.
Yeah, you can name, really, you can name any instrument over the course of country music history, and it's going to be a part of it. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite song?
Oh, my goodness. No, I don't. It's just too difficult. My brain would explode.
Is there a song that when the songwriters play those songs, mm-hmm. that blow people away?
Yes, that happens a lot. It's an emotional roller coaster. That when they tell the stories, they're poignant and emotional, but also funny and hilarious. And a lot of that has to do with how the songs were written and how they found their way to the recording artist. So yeah, there's some very emotional times in these songwriter rounds. You see people visibly crying a lot.
Wow. Tears of laughter.
Or tears of laughter and tears of joy and all of that are happening. That's what's fun about it. That's what makes it magical.
My thanks to Mike, to Caesar, to David, and to Bjorn Larson. And my thanks to you for listening to this Ion Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, you know what to do. Just log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Ion Travel Podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis-Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Ion Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Ion Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
If you like Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews, and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.